It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Now we've got that rule that will impeach for just the third time in history a sitting U.S. president. Let me tell you about the rule. It's going to be a closed rule, meaning there's going to be no amendments. There's going to be 6 hours of debate equally divided between the two sides. It's going to take us late into the evening, perhaps sometime after 6 o'clock. We might see the actual historical vote. And there won't be just one. There will be two votes because there's two articles of impeachment, abuse of power, obstruction of Congress. But when they were getting this rule, boy, did things get heated. Watch this.
What's up is down and down is up. We're more Alice in Wonderland than we are House of Representatives.
There will be a day of reckoning, but what you do here and how we have trashed the process in getting here will live on, and it will affect everything that we've come for.
Now, ahead of this vote, we saw a scathing letter from President Trump sent directly to Speaker Pelosi comparing this impeachment to the Salem witch trials. He writes, it is an illegal, partisan, and attempted coup. And he directly says to her, quote, you have cheapened the importance of the very ugly word impeachment. Pelosi downplaying the letter, writing her own letter to her fellow lawmakers, imploring them that, quote, if we do not act, we'll be derelict in our duty, concluding in America, no one is above the law. Here's a spoiler alert. Guys, we know what's going to happen. She needs 216 votes. She's well within that reach. We talked a lot this week about those 31 vulnerable Democrats. Some 28 are going to vote for impeachment. That means perhaps at the end of this day, they will vote to send it to the Senate where the trial, if it's any indication between the two leaders, majority leader and minority leader, it is going to be really fiery. Watch this exchange.
I'm not an impartial juror. This is a political process. There's not anything judicial about it.
It's clear that Senator McConnell wants to use the Senate to help participate in a cover-up.
Now save some popcorn for the very end of your evening, because about the same time that this vote will take place, history will be made. President Trump will be taking the stage in Battle Creek, Michigan, and I bet he's got a lot to say about it.
All right, that was Griff Jenkins on Fox and Friends this morning. And so they're beginning at 9 o'clock this morning. They worked until late last night. They worked all day yesterday establishing the rules for this procedure. Now the House goes into session this morning. They'll be in session until late tonight, and then they take the vote. And Griff told you a lot of details there. But I just want to say one thing right up front. Please pray for our president today. The barrage and wickedness. I told you yesterday about that attack on Women for Trump yesterday at the Willard Hotel, or a couple of days ago over the weekend, I guess. By people who were at a wedding, who happened to be Democrats and part of the DNC, attacking the women who were just in the restroom, calling them unmentionable names, preventing them from getting on the elevator and saying lewd things about women who can't, it had to do with, body functions, can't get on this elevator. Just unbelievable, aggressive rudeness. And then they ended up hitting, I think, 4 to 6 of them, surrounded the speaker for their evening, which was a former NFL player, and he was hit and injured, and it was just unbelievable. That's just a beautiful hotel in the middle of D.C., and that should give you an idea of a manifestation of the wickedness and the divisions. Now, I know D.C. isn't by itself, but I'm telling you, that's the epic, that's the apex, and that's the tip of the spear of the aggression and the hatred. It really does. It's palpable in Washington, D.C., and the president is receiving the blunt force of all of that. And trust me, you and I are also in the crosshairs. It may be that he's the center right now, but once he's out, assuming they can destroy him, and trust me, they will want to destroy him. They will never let him go. They will never let his family go, because they are that wicked. It's total destruction or nothing. And so, one, the president is facing this incredible barrage today, and I kind of wish Griff and the other folks at Fox and others, they become too amused by it all and forget the gravity. I think it maybe it's like a policeman who gets hardened by the brutality and the mistreatment of children and the horrible things they see, and they start seeing the humor. Or, you know, soldiers do the same thing. It could be that news anchors and news people, pundits who live in D.C. become sort of cynical, and they find it funny because they actually find it so depressing and despairing. So that might be part of the reason. But do not forget the gravity of today. And so tonight the vote will be taken. The Democrats, through the voice of Zoe Lofgren, kind of made it clear last night why, at least they know he can't probably be convicted in the House and the Senate, but nevertheless, it has its value. Let's listen to Zoe Lofgren.
If the president gets away with this, as you basically said, Katie, bar the door here. I guess my question to you is, what makes this process worth it if the outcome is what it appears to be, that he will be acquitted in the Senate? How will you tell your constituents, how will you tell people the next time around that this process was worth it?
Well, we have our job to do here in the House, which is to evaluate the evidence and to decide whether the president has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. He has, in my opinion. Now, the vote to impeach will be a stain on his record forever. He will only be the third president in history to have that record. I hope that the Senate will take their obligation seriously, sort through the evidence, and reach a verdict instead of just doing a political dance.
All right, that's enough. A stain on his record forever. Man, that's great. We could at least stain his record. Let him go down in history as one of only three who've been impeached. That's something, you know. So that's part of what's driving them. You heard that Griff say that 28 of the 31 Democrats who are in formerly Trump-held districts have pledged now support for impeachment. And I want to repeat what I told you yesterday. I can guarantee you, I don't have proof of this. This is just what I'm telling you because of the things that I have experienced myself, that those people in those districts are being offered some really terrific stuff, everything from money to positions. Don't be fooled to think they're being heroic. Oh, that's what they want you to think. Oh, you know, it's my constitutional duty. I have to do what my conscience tells me. Oh, and by the way, trust me, the deal will be sweetened. We'll wait and see. Oh, maybe I'm all wrong. Maybe they are all, you know, really patriotic in their own minds, and impeaching this president is the patriotic duty. Perhaps, maybe. But I doubt it. So we'll see what happens as this thing unfolds. Now, the president, Griff, alluded to this. He wrote a letter, 6 pages, to Speaker Nancy Pelosi. I've heard jokes about it already this morning. I don't get that. It's not a funny letter. It's actually a very powerful letter. I'll read you some of it. He said that he told Nancy Pelosi that she's opening the impeachment inquiry is an open war on American democracy. He tells her that she has violated her oath of office and cheapened the importance of the very ugly word impeachment. Everyone, you included, knows what's really happening. Your chosen candidate lost the election in 2016 in an electoral college landslide, and you and your party have never recovered from this defeat. So you have spent 3 straight years attempting to overturn the will of the American people and nullify their votes. You view democracy as your enemy. You are the ones interfering in the American election. You are the ones subverting America's democracy. You are the ones obstructing justice. You are the ones bringing pain and suffering to our republic for you, your own selfish, personal, political, and partisan gain. Now, Pelosi responded to this by calling the letter ridiculous. And I guess, you know, some of the pundits last night snickered too, or this morning that I heard. She said that she feels fine, but she's sad about the impending impeachment vote. But in his letter, President Trump said to her, Mrs. Pelosi, he hammered her for daring to invoke the founding fathers in pursuit of this election nullification scheme. And even worse, for offending Americans of faith by continually saying, I pray for the president, when you know that statement is not true, unless it is meant in a negative sense. It is a terrible thing you are doing, President Trump added, but you will have to live with it, not I. All right, so that letter, it's a 6-page letter. We'll put it on our Facebook page because I think you should read it. when you're hearing the pundits chuckle about it, you just read for yourself and you see if you think it's funny. I think it's really powerful, and I'm glad he did it. Somebody's got to fight for him. Somebody has to fight. Now, I want to tell you the other side of this coin. Oh, boy, before I run out of time, let's just listen to clip 11. This is the polls. Remember I told you the Fox poll yesterday, I didn't trust it. It said 50% still support impeachment. Ironically, CNN came out with a poll yesterday. Let's listen to Allison Camerota.
Post. Rachel, those are really interesting numbers. I'm interested in the Democratic support that's gone from 90% down to 77%, which I think is notable. And I think that you have heard Democrats behind the scenes, I think you have, at least expressing some cold feet about some of this. And so it's just interesting, as the elected officials have to make a decision tomorrow, and particularly the moderates, and you're seeing that public support even among their party drop.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt here because we won't play the whole thing. But here's the thing. This is CNN. This is Allison Camerota. So you have CNN's poll reflecting less support for impeachment than the Fox poll. When has that ever happened? But let me just say, 45%, according to the CNN poll of Americans, said in this that they support impeaching and removing the president. That represents a 5-point decrease from a poll conducted in mid-October. And this is the part Ellison was mentioning. Support even fell among Democrats, with 77% of Democrats polled now backing impeachment and removal, compared to 90% in November. And so, and then it goes on. There's more details about that. But I just wanted to share you that USA Today poll is interesting to me, too. It's the USA Today Suffolk poll, and it finds that President Trump will defeat President or Vice President Joe Biden by 3 points, Bernie Sanders by 5 points, Elizabeth Warren by 8 points, and then also in a hypothetical head-to-head, he beats Mayor Pete by 10 points, Mayor Bloomberg by 9. And that's a USA Today Suffolk University poll. So I just think, there are really good signs for many of us that feel that this is just a travesty and a huge mistake. And so please don't be in despair. Just don't be. We are hoping and praying that the American people, who have more common sense than people in Washington, except for those that are watching these other networks, although you heard that from CNN, no wonder this is interesting that some of the Democratic support is waning, because they are beginning to hear a few more things on CNN and MSNBC. I've played a couple of clips for you that they would not otherwise have heard. Once they hear the truth, it's not hard to figure out what's going on here. But when you're just fed a steady drip of propaganda against the president, then you are deluded. I read a tweet. I started to say Twitter, a tweet from someone who lives in New York City, and she was talking about how deluded. She was listening to an NPR interview about just declaring that the president, of course, once again, is worthy of impeachment, that he tried to affect the 2020 election by calling the Ukrainian president, which is just bogus. It just is. But she said the people really believe it. I just don't know how we're going to get past this blindness. And I think we get past this blindness by giving people the truth. That's how we get by this blindness. Now, the other bad news, George Conway, husband of Kellyanne, is right in the thick of a new endeavor, and that's a PAC that's formed called the Lincoln Project, that they're trying to defeat President Trump and any of the people that are supporting him in Congress. And so we've got all of these Republican strategists like Steve Schmidt, who worked for George W. Bush, John McCain, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and others whose names you might not remember. But these guys are political consultants who have done for such a long time terrible damage. I've probably talked to you about that. The political consultant class in Washington is corrupt. They are not conservative. They're the ones that have found really bad candidates, and they've been throwing money through the efforts of Karl Rove, who's had, you know, bottomless pockets, and also John McCain when he was living, to support really bad candidates. And that's part of why the Republican Party has did in the past go to the left, and many of them are still in place, and that's why it's an uphill battle to get conservatives running in those offices, because they have to counter these powerful people in the party. But now they formed a pact to defeat President Trump and also the people that support him. So there you go. Tonight, the president will be in Battle Creek, Michigan, rallying the faithful.
So when people first hear about MediShare, they have questions, some really good questions, starting with the obvious, what is it?
Well, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. It's not health insurance. It's a different way of doing things, which leads us to the next question. Why do people do this? Why do they become MediShare members? Here are two of the biggest reasons. Number one, people feel good about it. They're not trapped in a plan that makes them pay for things they don't believe in. They know their money is going to help people. And the second reason, people save a lot of money. Maybe you've heard us mention the typical family saves about $500 a month switching to MediShare. And one more big question, does it work? The answer is yes, 1,000 times yes, or 400,000 times, since that's how many MediShare members there are, and they've shared over $2 billion in medical expenses. So easy to find out right now how MediShare can work for you. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn, a ministry dedicated to helping save preborn babies from abortion through ultrasound.
I sense God's broken heart over the issue of abortion. You see, he sees every little baby that's being formed in the mother's womb, and it breaks his heart to see when the lifetime that he has planned for them is taken from them violently so often.
Preborn is the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear her baby's heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies whose lives were spared. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
For me, Truett means opportunities.
Truett means an adventure, a place where I can grow and become more like Jesus.
This is somewhere I belong.
To me, Truett is like a home far away from home.
Everyone is family from all different walks of life and from all over the world.
To me, Truett means a second home.
Truett McConnell University is home for me.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and now you know why I love Truett McConnell University. Hallmark has decided to don its gay apparel after all. The family-friendly network announced it will now broadcast television commercials featuring kissing lesbians. The ads for Zola, a wedding planning site, were initially pulled after 1 million moms launched a petition drive. However, Hallmark CEO Mike Perry says that decision was a mistake. He apologized and then announced Hallmark will partner with LGBT activists to integrate gay programming across its platforms. Hallmark's decision came just hours after Democrat presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg blasted the network's decision. The reality is the sex and gender revolutionaries want to indoctrinate your children, whether they're eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich or watching the Hallmark Channel. Be sure to download the latest edition of the Toddcast podcast with special guest Governor Mike Huckabee. It's a free download at toddstarnes.com.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Is moving forward with impeachment tomorrow. They passed two massive funding bills today. $1.4 trillion in spending. Both bills passed. They will be sent on to the Senate, where we expect that they will pass there and be sent on to the president for his signature. With $1.4 trillion in spending to fund the government through the end of the fiscal year, through the end of September, it's like a gigantic Christmas tree. There's something under it for everyone. And so almost every lawmaker can say their funding priorities are being met, and we do expect the president to sign.
All right, that was Mike Emanuel, and that's actually very, very, very important. I wanted to do a show on this this week, but there's so much happening. Ordinarily, this would be the center focus of our attention, and that is that the House yesterday approved a $1.4 trillion spending bill. Now, this is what happens every December, because in the last umpteen years, there's been such division in Washington and gamesmanship and big spending on the part of Republicans as well as Democrats. So what they've basically done is a wink and a nod to each other while increasing just everything. They've decided to increase spending on everything, all of their pet projects, everything. And then they push it right up against the Christmas holidays and everyone votes for it. And then the president is told that if he doesn't sign it, the government will shut down. And the president is kind of busy right now. Did you notice? He's a little bit busy. You think this impeachment nonsense has done anything to hurt this country? Well, let me just tell you. It's a 540-page bill. There's two parts of it. It's an omnibus. That means it's a huge, huge bill. They're supposed to be passing these bills in 12 different parts throughout the year, the funding of the government. But they've been off the rails so long, you probably don't remember that. Each area of the government, they're lumped into certain, they don't each have their own. Some of them are bunched together, is what I'm trying to say. So the Defense, Homeland Security, and Justice Department are in one segment, and it's a 540-page bill. The rest of it, a 1,773-page bill, is funding the rest of the government. So they've lumped it all together. And, of course, I think we had like 40 Republicans sign off on it. It's a bad bill. That's all I can say. It is a very bad bill. They put everything that they possibly want in there. Now, some things I'm reading, you know, I catch some things here that are positive. It says there's funding for President Trump's border wall, but I don't know how much. I don't know. Probably not much. It's also stripping Obamacare taxes. It raises the minimum age for buying tobacco products. It gives Democrats an increase for just about everything domestically, an increase for government workers by, I think, 3.1%. Yeah, a federal pay increase, a record Pentagon budget. Extensive repeal of those Obama-era taxes, as I just said, help for retired coal miners, an increase from 18 to 21 for the nationwide legal age to buy tobacco products. It says as we understand it, the president will sign it again. How could he possibly navigate a government shutdown right now? How could he focus on that? I mean, I wish he would. I wish he would veto this bill and let's do it. But I'm just saying there is a price to pay. I mean, this is going to increase our deficit by so much, and they're not done with it. The Democrats will throw in, and so will the Republicans, the bad ones, and there are plenty of them. Their pet projects for their state, things they want to happen, and that's going to come down the pike. It's going to go to the Senate, and we will, you know, I'm sure they'll pass it. So we'll see what happens. Now, the other huge story yesterday was laid out by Doug McElway on a special report last night on Fox. Let's listen.
This is a stunning rebuke of the FBI by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court in its order of this afternoon. The court chastised the FBI for the FISA abuses brought to light in the recent Inspector General's report. The IG found at least 17 significant errors or omissions in the Carter Page FISA applications. The chief judge of the FISA court writing today, the frequency with which representations made by FBI personnel turned out to be unsupported or contradicted by information in their possession and with which they withheld information detrimental to their case calls into question whether information contained in other FBI applications is reliable. Today's rare response comes after former FBI Director James Comey acknowledged wrongdoing in seeking the FISA warrant to surveil former Trump campaign aide Carter Page.
He's right. I was wrong. I was overconfident in the procedures that the FBI and Justice had built over 20 years. I thought they were robust enough. It's incredibly hard to get a FISA. I was overconfident in those.
In fact, it's not been real hard, as Comey suggests, to get a FISA warrant. The government made 1,081 FISA surveillance requests in 2018. The court rejected only one of them. That's an approval rate of well over 99%, a number which is raising concern that the FISA court has been a rubber stamp for the FBI.
Many of us have been looking at this FISA, the secret FISA court for years, saying this isn't the first and won't be the last time that the FBI misrepresents evidence before this court.
If they're not willing to discipline people who mislead the court, manipulate evidence given to the court, this is going to be hard for us to say the court should stay around.
The FISA court is also ordering the government to submit a sworn statement by January 20th of, quote, what it has done and plans to do to ensure that the statement of facts in each FBI application accurately and completely reflects information possessed by the FBI that is material to any issue presented by the application. This is all information that U.S. Attorney John Durham may factor into his ongoing criminal investigation.
All right. I have a lot to say about this, and bear with me. I'll try to make it as clear as I can because people are weighing in on what this means. Yesterday, I had all prepared a piece for you entitled, Who is Missing in Action After IG Horowitz's FISA Abuse Findings? The FISA Court. So the assumption by Doug McElway in his report and what others are reporting is that, oh, gosh, this is great. The FISA court's finally weighing in. We're hearing from them. Now something's going to be done. Sadly, I think I have to set that record straight. Doesn't mean nothing's going to be done. It just means it may mean nothing. Rosemary Collier, who is the presiding judge of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, of course, Doug just gave you an idea of what she's saying. Look, now we know because of the report from the Inspector General that the FBI has lied and you have to stop lying to us and we have to have response by January, whatever it was. And so I think it's 21st or something like that. Here's the problem. We know now that Devin Nunes, over about 2 years ago, explicitly warned the FISA court that they were being lied to. He was very specific to them. He wrote a memo calling out what had happened, and so did Mark Meadows in 2018. Both of them told Judge Collier and the FISA court that the FBI was abusing their trust. In fact, there was a pushback. There was a letter where DOJ wrote back Devin Nunes and Assistant Attorney General Stephen Boyd. Now, remember, this is under Rod Rosenstein, was rebuking Devin Nunes for this memo. We believe it would be extraordinarily reckless for the committee to disclose such information publicly without giving the department and the FBI the opportunity to review the memorandum and to advise the committee of the risk of harm to national security and to ongoing investigations that could come from public release. And it goes on and on and on. Because they did not want it released, what Devin Nunes and Mark Meadows, these are separate requests that they each made, and they were in the authority to make that kind of request. Remember, Devin Nunes was chairman of the committee. It was his committee that had oversight of the FISA court. And yet the Judge Collier sort of responded by just telling them, I don't even know what her words were, but basically she didn't take it seriously. And now she's claiming in her letter that she didn't know why they just didn't know. And let me read to you this post by Scott Johnson. At long last, the FISA court has taken notice of the egregious government misconduct committed in connection with the FISA warrants it approved on Carter Page. The order appears under the signature of FISA court presiding Judge Rosemary Collier. Like so many involved in the Russia hoax, she claims only lately to have tumbled to the misconduct committed before her court, courtesy of the Department of Justice Inspector General report last week. Reading the order, I would like to borrow Trey Gowdy's comment on James Comey's midnight confession of pseudo-culpability to Chris Wallace this past Sunday. Quoting Trey Gowdy, sometimes it's better late than never, and sometimes it's just too blank late. And Scott writes, I put this order in the latter of the two categories. He says that Judge Collier orders the government to inform the court. It's January 10th, by the way. And it goes on, he details what she's ordering, and then he ends by saying, what a farce. What a farce. So now here's Devin Nunes speaking out on this with Laura Ingraham this past Sunday night, I think it was. And since he was the first one that alerted us, remember in that interesting sudden press conference that took place outside the Washington Executive the White House Executive Building, 3 years ago? This is what he had to say about the FISA court and Judge Collier's letter. Let's listen.
I'm glad to see the FISA court come out and make a statement. But your viewers need to know that the FISA court is also culpable in this madness also.
How so?
And I say that because we sent them two letters, very specific letters. This is probably people are hearing this for the first time. Mm-hmm. We sent one, I believe, in February of 2018, warning them of very serious matters. That it was based on the memo that we had put forward. At that time, they did absolutely nothing about it. Yeah. Then again, when we found out that Source 2, the only additional information, okay, that was there, it was essentially the dossier,
right.
the dirt. It was the fake news stories that they used, and then it was this Source 2. Well, we assumed the whole time, we assumed when we wrote the original memo that Source 2 was legitimate. But later, Trey Gowdy, who you're going to have on in a little bit, and myself and John Ratcliffe and our investigative team, we began to look at Source 2, and we discovered, number one, that they had actually begun spying before they even got the warrant.
Yeah.
But number two, they left all of this exculpatory evidence. This is evidence that they should have put forward on both Page and Papadopoulos. And I think Papadopoulos is really key because he's the reason that they started the entire investigation, and he denied it clearly. So at that point, when you have a full-blown CIA investigation going on, you should do something. But the point here, Martha, is that the court knew about all this. So I'm not saying that I'm glad they've acted. I'm glad they've said something, but I think the court needs the court has to be ended.
That's what I was just going to ask you, because tomorrow I'm going to interview the Attorney General, William Barr, and we're going to talk about this. Do you believe that the Fisk court should be eliminated, as Andrew Napolitano is also, the judge is also advised on this show?
Yeah, we need a process, okay? So I'm not going to speak in absolutes, but I will say that the way that the courts conducted themselves is totally inappropriate. They ignored clear evidence that we presented to them. That remember, they had this. The American people didn't have it. We had seen it. They had it. They did absolutely nothing about it.
Yes, so that was Devin Nunes. Now, here's the timeline on this. Devin Nunes over the weekend, and maybe even earlier, but notably, by the way, that was him with Martha McCallum. And she does such a great job. He was on with her last night. It seems to me that the timeline is that Devin Nunes called for the disbanding of the FISA court, stopping it completely. Remember, this is a secret court. This is a thing that you don't even know they have as much power as the Supreme Court, really, over this area. They have total authority to surveil American persons, people living, whether they're citizens or not. And there is no pushback. Nobody knows they're being surveilled. And when you have the government turn against you, the full force of the FBI and all law enforcement and surveillance and everything, you don't stand a chance. How can you possibly? You're supposed to be able to defend yourself and your privacy with the Fourth Amendment. And they established the FISA court because of terrorism. That's how this came about. And the check and balance was a trustworthy FBI. That did the investigations and brought the appeal to these judges in private for the ability to surveil people that they suspected were up to no good. And it provided a lot of really wonderful benefits because they didn't have to go to the court and get a warrant and didn't have to be bogged down with not the normal process. It happened quickly. And all kinds of abilities were unleashed on the people that were to be investigated. So for the left, this court has been a nightmare for a long time. And now this court, it sounds to me, now look, this may be a leap, but this court has really turned a blind eye to its own responsibilities. Because Devin Nunes, I even have the letter that he wrote Rosemary Collier in February of 2018, and he tells her exactly what was happening. And she did nothing. And I also remember that this, I think it was Rudolph Contreras, who was one of the FISA judges, was a very good friend with FBI agent Peter Strzok. In fact, as I recall, they had a sort of a dinner with Peter Strzok and several of them got together. I think John Brennan was there too, and the FISA court judge. So what's with that? What is with that? I think investigation is required, and I guess I would, based on what I've learned today, I would have to join with Devin Nunes and say that this court needs to be disbanded. This is just this is a disaster. Many people think that's why Rosemary Collier is speaking out, because Devin Nunes has the wherewithal, especially if the Republicans take back the House. That court could be. Where's the Chief Justice? He should be overseeing this as well. Why has he done nothing? That's another thing. Let me read one last comment to you from Lee Smith. The Collier order is so weak, self-exculpatory, and based on ridiculous assumptions, it only underscores the fact that the FISA program is a catastrophe. So there you go. That's the story behind the story of what you're going to hear about today about that Judge Collier's orders. It doesn't mean that it means nothing. Thank goodness she's asking for something. But the truth is that the court has gotten out of control and at least to probably be disbanded and reconfigured if they're going to use it at all. This is Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
The one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative Party has won a thumping majority in Britain's Parliament. The decisive outcome to a Brexit-dominated election will allow Johnson to fulfill his plan to remove Britain from the EU on January 31st. Despite the English media's predictions to the contrary, the election delivered the largest Conservative majority since the Margaret Thatcher era. Many regressive pundits frothed at the prospect of England having its first openly Marxist prime minister in Jeremy Corbyn, and also predicted Corbyn's election indicated what would happen in America in 2020. But the Brits rejected communist Corbyn. Freedom won.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
The broadcast ministry American Family Radio provides Christian teaching and commentary 365 days a year on over 180 radio stations. This is Walker Wildman, Vice President of Operations for American Family Association. By supporting AFA, you are supporting our broadcast ministry and helping to keep Christians informed across America. Please consider a tax-deductible gift to AFA as 2019 draws to a close. Thank you and Merry Christmas.
More online at AFR.net.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Hallmark used to be a network that was safe to watch with the whole family without having to explain awkward things to your children. Not anymore. When Hallmark allowed wedding planning company Zola to air a commercial featuring two lesbians kissing as they planned their same-sex wedding, pro-family Americans protested to Hallmark. The company immediately apologized and said it would never happen again. Then the bullies of Big Gay swung into action with their threats, and Hallmark abjectly surrendered in less than 48 hours. The commercial is back on, and Christmas movies about homosexual love will be sure to follow. It was perhaps the swiftest capitulation to the gay Gestapo in history. Time was when Hallmark movies did not need to come with a parental advisory warning. Those days are over. Watch Hallmark with your family at your own risk.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
Now it's up to us to decide whether the United States is still a nation where no one is above the law, or whether America is allowed to become a land run by those who act more like kings or queens.
All of this is backwards. What's up is down and down is up. We're more Alice in Wonderland than we are House of Representatives.
We believe this conduct is impeachable. He believes his conduct is perfect. And we know, therefore, that it will take place again and again.
The whole impeachment thing is a hoax. We look forward to getting onto the Senate. We're not entitled to lawyers. We're not entitled to witnesses. We're not entitled to anything in the House.
That was a montage from Fox News last night. The vote is taking place, we think, tonight. They will be meeting this morning in about 15 minutes. It's going to start. I think there's 6 hours of debate, evenly divided, allegedly, between Republicans and Democrats. What more can they say, by the way? Just wondering what else they could say. I believe that I just read an article yesterday about how they started repeating themselves in a hearing 2 days ago, and now they have to repeat themselves today. Could I remind you, as I remind myself, that those guys that are just working so hard to defend the rule of law in the House, Doug Colliers and Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan and Ratcliffe and Devin Nunes and others whose names I'm not thinking of in this moment, They are working round the clock. They are taking, you know, years off their own lives by taking on this burden on our behalf. So I just ask you to let that be a motivation for you not to stop doing what you can do wherever you are. As long as there are men, there may come a time when we will have to really run for the hills and run, flee for safety. That may happen, where all kinds of things will collapse. If the left takes over, that is going to happen. Just telling you. I don't want to spoil your holidays, but I'm just telling you, in reality, we are really on a precipice. And so while these guys are just fighting and giving it all, they're all, they must have our support, whether it's financially, in their various races, in their town halls, phone calls, whatever, and certainly prayer that God will give them strength and energy to do what they have to do, because they have a long, grueling day today. The vote takes place tonight, or they may carry it over till tomorrow. If it gets too late, you can bet they will, because they want the primetime audience to be watching them as they vote for this. They will have to ruin the president's reputation, says Zoe Lofgren. This will be a stain on his record. This will be a stain, and that's such a good thing. And we want everybody to see that moment where he becomes stained. So if it goes too late tonight, I'm sure they'll wait and save the vote for all of us for tomorrow morning. But there's another casualty here. I think I alluded to this yesterday, but honestly, I'm not sure I got to it. This is just like a gut punch to me. And that is that the judge in Michael Flynn's case has decided to ignore all the evidence that came out in the Inspector General's report of the prosecutorial abuse, of the abuse of the FBI. In fact, the Justice Department had asked Emmett Sullivan to hold off his decision until the Inspector General report came out, and they did that for a reason. But Judge Emmett Sullivan's response was to ignore all of that and to reject all of the arguments of Sidney Powell, that there's evidence that's been withheld, that the FBI has operated in bad faith, that the prior counsel for General Flynn was also not really defending him well, because they were, this is too complicated to explain to you, but let me just say that they had mishandled something else that related to him by a business partner, and they were culpable for some bad dealings. And so because of that, they were not giving a full-fledged defense of General Flynn. We didn't know that until recently. I didn't really understand it till recently. I had it explained to me in great detail. But so the judge has ordered General Flynn for sentencing on January the 28th. This is the worst possible news. It really is. It's the worst possible news for General Flynn. I am sick. Remember, General Flynn pled guilty to one count of perjuring himself to the FBI. That's allegedly his crime. And we've talked a great deal about this. Remember that he was, shall I repeat it? I guess I should. That it was in the early days of his position as a security, national security, the head of national security for the White House. And they set him up, basically. They didn't tell him they were really going to be interviewing him for potential criminal offense, his dealing with the Russians. He thought they were friends. And they came to the office, two of the FBI agents. One of them was Peter Strzok. The other was this Piet, I think it's Pietka is his name. They interviewed him. And by the way, they decided, based on their, at least one of them said he didn't think Flynn was lying. He was assigned to watch General Flynn's facial expressions. That came out in this Inspector General's report. And based on his watching his facial expressions, he did not think General Flynn was lying. But somehow the report on that particular interview was changed by Lisa Page. And it's a monstrous story. It really is. And yet Emmett Sullivan has chosen to ignore it. And he accuses Sidney Powell of plagiarism. Now, I've read about half a dozen reports on this morning. And Sidney Powell says this, the plagiarism accusation makes no sense. He's accusing her of plagiarizing or not giving full attribution on one of the quotes. She said she relied on briefing in one of my own cases, and both were cited and linked. Both cited and linked the brief written primarily by my brilliant friend Lucas Walker. That's how Judge Sullivan knew the source for the material. And yet Judge Sullivan is accusing her of plagiarism. So in other words, it's her fault. She's falsified information, and so he's rejecting her arguments and demanding that he sentence General Flynn without considering any of the malfeasance by the FBI. Let me read this. For Judge Sullivan, the guilty plea was the beginning and the end. Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI, and none of the evidence he seeks to change that, and much of the withheld evidence, is irrelevant to that specific charge. That's what the Judge Sullivan believes. What Judge Sullivan did not address, though, was the IG report issued last week. The omission seems odd, given that federal prosecutors suggested the IG report had relevance to some of the questions raised in the motion to compel and then justify the request to delay sentencing, in part on the impending release of the report. The failure to even mention the IG report strengthens the conclusion that, to Judge Sullivan, Flynn's guilty plea outweighed any prosecutorial misconduct. Let me read a little bit more of this. This is Margot Cleveland. She's a law professor at, I think it's Notre Dame, and she's been following this very carefully, and I've been reading her stuff, but she's not the only person I'm reading. Margot goes on to say, although the IG report already handed him one significant detail, an FBI agent had attended a briefing with then-candidate Trump and Flynn to assess Flynn's demeanor. The agent would later be one of the agents to interview Flynn in January 2017, and after talking with Flynn, would conclude he did not think Flynn was lying. And it looks as though, Margot says, the only way the judge might change his mind is if Flynn goes to him and tells him, I'm not guilty, and I only pled that way because they threatened my son, which we've talked about pretty often on this show. Let me go on to say, that's more about the Powell plagiarism accusation. I'm not going to get in the weeds to that because I think it will bog us down. But let me read Technofog as a blog or a Twitter account that many people that I trust in D.C. read. And this is what he says, or she says, this is embarrassing. Judge Sullivan's accusation that a plagiarized brief violated the rule against, quote, dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation, end quote, is fraudulent. The case he cites has to do with a lawyer demanding payment for a brief he didn't write, and that's fraud. And so that's what the general consensus is that what in the world, what is he talking about? What's wrong with Emmett Sullivan? Tyler Durden weighs in on it too. I won't take time to read his, but I will read this last one. This is pretty discouraging. And this is, I can't verify the truth of this. This was sent to me by someone I trust. This would be inside the Beltway information. It would have to be corroborated, but his name is John Here to Help. And it was sent to me again by someone that I trust. So this is what it says. Dear Judge Sullivan, it is with a heavy heart that I learned of your recent order against General Flynn and the rebuke of his counsel, Sidney Powell. As a judge, you have been very critical in the past regarding Brady violations by prosecutors. That means prosecutors withholding evidence that they know would help the person they're trying to prosecute from their defenders. They're not allowed to do that. So that's what a Brady violation is. This order is a complete reversal of your previously held opinions. That goes back to Ted Stevens. A lot of people thought that Emmett Sullivan was really solid because of his judgment that Ted Stevens had been very badly treated by the FBI. And that's a sad story. That was a senator. I wasn't a Ted Stevens fan, but I didn't think he needed to be killed. He ended up dying in a plane crash, and the full weight of the government came down on his head. I think he was one of the swing votes on Obamacare, as I recall. It's an incredible story, but Judge Sullivan was one of the persons that got to the bottom of that, and so people have trusted him. But then John Here to Help says this, you, sir, have very weighty issues upon your head, and to think your aspirations of a federal bench were assured after being appointed by Ronald Reagan, only to be derailed by that unfortunate political legal wrestling match with Dick Cheney. I don't know anything about that, not without looking it up, and I didn't. Then he goes on to say, not to fear, Bill Clinton stepped in and appointed you to the bench you now hold. I can't imagine how grateful you must have felt, especially when his wife was facing very difficult email questions in the 2015-2016 election cycle. And on top of all of that, you managed to keep your cool. Now, by the way, he was the judge in that, and that didn't turn out very well. So the point that John's going to make is that Emmett Sullivan's record has gone downhill since 2015. He hasn't been ruling the way he used to rule, and for conservatives, he's operating on his past laurels, which have changed dramatically. He says, and on top of all of that, you managed to keep your cool with your son and all that unfortunate business. Thank heavens you're a longtime friend, fellow alum and partner associate on so many projects, Elijah Cummings was able to take care of it, especially when Rod intended to exploit things. No one wanted that young man to pay for the crimes he actually committed. I suppose such stressful situations can leave a mark no matter how well handled. Perhaps that explains why the vast majority of your decisions since 2015 have been in direct opposition to your previous record. Whatever the case may be, let me be the first to congratulate you on your recent acceptance of a very lucrative board position at the Environmental Law Institute. I know it isn't public yet. You're a modest man and wanted to keep it secret, but it's too exciting to keep quiet. And please give my regards to Mr. George Soros. He recognized your long-standing commitment to the environment and contributed all those hundreds of millions to expand board positions for qualified people like yourself. May your impact on environmental issues be as effective as your time on the bench, only with much less stress. Don't ever let anyone doubt it. You, Judge Sullivan, have certainly earned your new position. Wow. Now, that's obviously written by someone inside the Beltway who knows all this stuff. Everybody there who's been there any time knows a ton of stuff that the public never knows. So, I don't know who John Here to Help is, but that is a really damning tweet. He obviously knows things. This whole business, I guess we should listen for the news that he's been appointed to this board position at the Environmental Law Institute, which has been funded by George Soros. About his son, I don't know what kind of stuff his son got into, but obviously John knows that. That's the problem. The point is that the corruption goes down so deep. Here we have Emmett Sullivan, who conservatives thought they could trust, ruling ridiculously that the attorney for General Flynn plagiarized herself, and so many attorneys are weighing in just saying, are you kidding me? This is just bogus. What is the matter with Emmett Sullivan? We thought he would bring justice to this. He's throwing out all the evidence of the Horowitz report, even after the Justice Department asked him to withhold judgment, withhold sentencing until he heard that report, and it didn't faze him. He's not going to listen. And then we have the FISA court, having been warned of what the FBI was doing, specifically the things that they were doing by Devin Nunes and Mark Meadows, and doing nothing about it. And now claiming, oh, no, we just found out these things from the Michael Horowitz report last week, when that's a lie. Having one of their number be very close to Peter Strzok, it's so disturbing. I have to say, though, let me as I was reflecting on this in the last few days, especially where the FBI is concerned, it is true. From what I can discern, and I probably would know if it were different, there are probably, I'm saying 10, maybe a dozen, maybe 10, at the top of the FBI who perpetrated this fraud, who did horrible things, who really committed treason as far as I'm concerned, undermining the Constitution, taking matters into their own hands, but not the rank and file. It was not the rank and file. It was the top echelon who were managing all of this, in spite of James Comey saying that was seven layers below me. Are you kidding me? What a liar. What an incredible, depressing liar. But that was the top. If so, I'm saying I still think things could be changed. If President Trump can prevail through all of this, and if conservatives can come out and start supporting good candidates, we could still purge that hole in Washington, which has just done horrendous things to the safety of the country. We could purge that. We could purge government workers. We could reduce the size of agencies. And we could gain back control. But it takes our part, too. So let's do it, okay? All right, continue to pray today, as I will, too. And thank you so much for listening. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.